All right, our next speaker will be Robert Bowling.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure being here this morning. And Meg, I'll try to get through this and not use up too much of your time for your official presentation. So this morning I'm going to be talking about cotton flea hopper management based on monitoring, field location, and cultivars. And for this presentation, there's going to be a lot of different folks involved. Some of those that are listed here or have the direct involvement with the research, so Michael Brewer, Stephen Biles, Darwin Anderson is a technician for Mike, and also Isaac Escoville. But there's certainly a lot of other folks that are involved in generating the information that we use in these types of presentations, and some of those are mentioned here. Financial support. Without this financial support, none of this would be possible. So we do acknowledge Cotton Incorporated for their financial support, as well as this USDA Step Up Training, which is kind of a unique opportunity we have of training undergraduates. So for the presentation itself, we're going to start off talking about a general overview with cotton flea hoppers, the damage they cause, management, moving on to field monitoring of cotton flea hopper populations, field variations based on edge effects, which is something that Isaac's working on. It's very, very interesting information as well. And how these neighboring vegetations can influence cotton flea hopper populations. And then we'll end up this presentation talking about cotton sensitivity to damage by cotton flea hoppers. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide. Tyler did a very nice job of talking about the general biology of the insect. The only thing I will say is that when they do move to cotton, the damage is usually from feeding on those young squares, resulting in square drop. That, in turn, can lead to reduced yields and also may delay harvest. Now, the thresholds are usually regional-type thresholds, and they can range anywhere from 10 to 35%. When you start talking about cultivars, they may actually change up to that 45% range, depending on the cotton cultivar that we're talking about. So let's talk a little bit about management. And this these next two slides are some work that were conducted by Stephen Biles, our IPM agent in South Texas. He does an excellent job with a variety of different things, and it's always a pleasure to be able to present his information. So this is just looking at the value of these insecticide treatments on protecting those early squares, and basically what he found is that Centric and imidacloprid do a very good job of protecting those early squares. But the other information that he gleaned out of this research was that the top square and that second square are most at risk for damage and abscission by cotton flea hopper. This is a similar test where, again, he's showing there's a wide range of insecticides that do an excellent job of protecting those early squares from flea hopper damage. But I think one of the other things he gleaned out of this particular research is the majority of that population is made up of nymphs, not so much adults. So if you're out there scouting, looking for adults, it may screw up your scouting efforts. So we can show that we can kill these insects, but how does that translate into yield preservation? And so this was some work that was done by Roy Parker back in 2010, where again, he showed that the insecticides did provide a very high level of protection against these flea hoppers. So we saw very good control versus the untreated check in that top slide. But when you move down to that lower portion of this slide, it really didn't translate to significant yield protection based on the information that he received from these yield estimates. So the question is, under what conditions will plants not be damaged? And I think that's the question we have right now. And some folks say, well, do we really need to protect plants from cotton flea hopper? And I think we do, but under what conditions? So this is some work that Mike Brewer initiated in 2015, looking at the variety Phytogen 333. He's just completed his second year of this research, moving into the third year. So in 2015, we had a May 1st planting date, excellent growing conditions for cotton in South Texas in 2015. He used a range of economic thresholds from 15%, 30%, and 45%. using these triggers. The 15% threshold triggered twice, the first time in the second week of squaring, and then again in the third week of squaring. At 30%, 45%, we didn't reach those thresholds until the third week of squaring. But as a result, we did see some differences in bowl abscissions or square abscissions, and we also saw a yield response as well, with about 20% yield preservation using these thresholds versus the untreated check. But then it goes into 2016, the March 30 planting date, same type of environmental conditions, excellent growing conditions. Experiments set up the same way. Again, we saw that trigger on the second week with at the 15% level. In the third week, it did reach that 15% level again. Not quite at the 30 and 45% levels, but there was a decision made to go ahead and treat those plants when the application for that 15% threshold was made. And in this situation, didn't really see any effect on percent abscission or yield. And it's just part of that frustration when you're dealing with this particular insect. Sometimes you get a response, sometimes you don't. So the next step is to repeat this particular study in 2017, and I think you have to focus your efforts more on bowl retention at 3 and 7 days after treatment. So moving on, let's talk a little bit about monitoring, how we monitor this insect. I think some of that work that Stephen did showing that most of that population is made up of nymphs over adults means that we need to do a better job of detecting the nymphs in these cotton fields. So this particular research looked at different monitoring techniques. Of course, the current threshold is based on visual observations, so I'm still not too certain what this KISS method is. Is it just a presence-absence type thing, or what in the world is it?
No, it's an inverse leaf blower.
Leaf blower. I'm not real familiar with that. I've never seen it.
But you blow up some vacuum.
Okay.
And does pretty good actually.
It's very good.
Blows instead of sucks. Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. See, yeah, okay. So then the beet cloth method, beet bucket, as well as the sweep net. And in that top left figure, what you'll see is that it takes experienced eyes, experienced people to actually do a good job of detecting these cotton flea hoppers. So there is some training necessary to really make these folks effective scouts when they're looking for a cotton flea hopper. If we focus our attention on that lower right figure, this is just looking at the time required to do these various scouting activities. And one of the issues with visual observations is that it takes twice as long to do that, even with these experienced personnel over some of these other techniques. When we look at the sweep nets, it's hard to get consistent information on these early squaring cottons. So that's one of the negatives about sweep nets. The beet bucket, one of the nice things that Stephen and Mike found in the research is that these beet buckets do a very nice job of capturing nymphs, which may be more important than actually looking for those adults. And the other benefit of these beet bucket techniques is that they pick up birdie plant bug as well, so you're getting a 2-for-1 with one sampling technique. So the next steps in this particular research will be evaluating the economic threshold for visual observations based compared with the beet bucket. So we really don't have a good handle of what that threshold might look like with the beet bucket, but certainly something we'll be working on in 2017. And of course, continuing with the training on these various scouting techniques, and also looking at the possible dual benefit of using these beet bucket techniques as well. So we're moving on. This is going very fast, but it's nice to see all this activity that's being conducted down in South Texas. And it just kind of gives you an idea of what all's going on down there. But this is some work that Isaac Escoville is currently doing. If you saw his presentation yesterday, he did a very nice job of going more detailed with what I will be looking at these edge effects. And not only the edge effects, but the neighboring vegetation around these cotton fields. And so the question is, do Edge and neighbors matter as far as flea hopper populations? And so the things he's interested in with the neighboring vegetation is looking at these cotton-to-cotton interfaces, cotton to sorghum, and cotton to native or natural vegetation. And then looking further at the edge effect moving into the field, or, you know, random sampling pattern up to 300 meters into the field versus transects, where he's actually doing more of a rigid sampling type. And essentially what he's finding is, yes, there is an edge effect. Basically, along that edge effect, where you see those transects or those interfaces, is that the flea hopper populations tend to be higher on that edge and tends to decline as you move into the field. When you consider the neighboring fields, again, we see the same thing, where the flea hopper populations are heavier on the edge versus within the field, and the highest population of these flea hoppers tends to be where cotton is neighboring native vegetation. So what does all this stuff mean? So basically what he's determined so far is the pest pressure is heaviest within 100 meters of that interface. And then when you move beyond that, the populations tend to decline very precipitously. The neighboring habitat, again, it does have an influence on these aphids, are these sugar. You can tell what I work on most of the time, sugarcane aphids. So I always do that in my presentations. At some point in time, I have to mention sugarcane aphids. That's just anyways. But actually look at these cotton flea hopper populations. The neighboring vegetation does matter with those higher populations occurring where cotton is bordering this native habitat. As far as the next steps, he's going to be looking at focusing on insect scouting to determine if we can just focus that effort mainly on the borders, and also looking at variable rates of the insecticides and utilizing those insecticides where they're needed most. And that may save some insecticide treatments through the season. And moving on to the very last thing that we actually initiated this past year is looking at cultivar sensitivity to cotton flea hoppers. And for this test, we're looking at two hairy leaf cotton varieties versus two smooth leaf cotton varieties. And essentially what we found this first year is that flea hoppers really don't have a preference for hairy leaf or smooth leaf cottons. We'll see just as many cotton flea hoppers on smooth leaf cotton or hairy leaf cottons versus the smooth leaf. But when we start looking at retention, we are seeing some differences in this first year with in that first position square, or the first position squares having a higher retention with those hairy leaf cottons versus the smooth leaf cottons. But we don't see that same effect with in the second position. And we did also see a yield response with the higher yields coming in from those hairy leaf cottons versus the smooth leaf cottons. As far as the next steps, we plan to repeat this study this coming year, but we're going to add more varieties. And we're also going to be looking at insecticide treatment too to give us a insect or cotton flea hopper free comparison with these untreated varieties. And then the big question is, do thresholds need to be adjusted based on the pubescence of these cottons? So to wrap things up, we know that cotton flea hopper is a key pest of cotton, but these variable populations make management very challenging. And that's what I hear when I came in. You know, the conversation was, when do we treat cotton flea hoppers and do we really need to treat them? So that's ongoing work, and it's going to be very important. We know that there's a wide variety of insecticides that do an excellent job of reducing these populations below a threshold level. As far as the next steps here, we're going to be looking at monitoring techniques to help detect those nymphs. We're going to be concentrating efforts at sampling near edges based on natural habitats. And, of course, looking at different cultivars and how they harbor fleas and how that may affect injury to these cottons. As far as future possibilities, again, Stephen Biles is going to be looking at maybe altering these thresholds using this beet bucket method if necessary, adjusting those thresholds upwards based on cultivars and pubescence on these cotton varieties, And also looking at these zones, these ecotones for flea hoppers and how we may adjust the strain applications as well. It's very quick. I appreciate your time and your patience. And I don't think I have any time for questions.